Hello, I'm Joe Cordell of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. At Cordell & Cordell, we encourage our clients to participate, to recognize how essential their role in this process is. They've got to be willing to help us help them. And by working jointly in a sort of partnership, we're more likely to get the best possible outcome for our clients. And that's really the standard that our clients can fairly hold us to, is what is the best possible outcome for them. So clients who are facing divorce need to recognize that for them to succeed, they need a partnership between them and their attorney.
The attorneys at Cordell & Cordell work to help men maximize their role in their children's lives. Contact the domestic litigation firm of Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's San Francisco area attorneys, a partner men can count on. 650-389-1111. Online at CordellCordell.com. That's CordellCordell.com. Offices in San Francisco, San Mateo, and San Jose. Se habla español. Legal services available in English and Spanish. Kimberly Llewellyn, licensed in California.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, you're tuned in to the Evening Edition. I'm Ezra Zayed. This is Outside the Lines, the show where we look at how colors influence our lives in unexpected ways. On today's episode, we're going to take a look at our history of architecture. More specifically, we're going to explore how our very colonial past left behind its mark on our architectural landscape, not only with regards to our heritage buildings, but also a variety of architectural styles which we still inherit today in our modern constructions. Joining me to take us through our colonial timeline is Professor Dr. Ahmad Sanusi Hassan, Professor of Architecture at University of Science Malaysia in Penang. We're going to start our timeline with the Malacca Sultanate, which was established after the fall of previous Buddhist and Hindu empires. By the time of the Malacca Sultanate, the buildings, as described by Professor Sanusi, would probably have looked similar to the Rumah Kampung as we know today.
There are several records by the voyagers. For example, by Ma Huan, who is the assistant of Cheng Ho or Cheng He. So, during his voyage to the Empire of Islamic Nation, one of the stops is Malacca. So, he writes, because the Chinese is the most civilized nation in writing at that time, has a record, okay, tell that Malacca, the house built using timber materials, okay, timber materials. And also report by Tommy Pires. Tommy Pires is a Portuguese who came to Malacca before the invasion of Portuguese. Tommy Pires, he like a spy to the Malacca city before the invasion. So he report to the Portuguese army. In his record say also the same, the house built using timber and built on stilts. There is the record that show made from timber and then on stilts. Of course, when we understand made from timber and on stilts, is a traditional Malay architecture. And the record also say by Tommy Pires, also made from bamboo. So this is a typical on stilt architecture and elevated several feet from the ground. And then there is not a story talking about the roof, but we can estimate already, anticipate the roof should be a long roof.
But by the late 15th century, things were about to change when Europe had developed a demand for spices, and Malacca was at the heart of the global spice trade.
The Portuguese, actually, they already marked target to invade Malacca and colonize, because they want to conquer the spice trade at that time. Spice trade is like petroleum commodity today. So whoever control the spice, they going to be an economic giant.
So when the Portuguese finally colonized Malacca in the year 1551, the date according to conventional historical records, they brought a rather different style of architecture to its shores.
Okay, at that time, if we look to the timeline, In Europe at that time is the beginning of Renaissance. Okay, that means the beginning of revival of Greek and Roman architecture.
In Europe, Renaissance architecture emphasized symmetry, proportion and geometry, some famous examples to illustrate the Greek and Roman elements which influenced the Renaissance style include the Parthenon in Athens and the Pantheon in Rome.
So the first building that they built is a fortress. Okay, of course, in Europe, they also have fortress architecture, okay, which play a big role in defense of any of the city. So they built fortress, okay, named Ephemosa, and of course their religion is Catholic. They built the first Catholic church in this region, the first Catholic church, Nossa Senhora Church, mean Mary on top of hill, built in 1521 by Captain Duarte Coelho. And the material, main material they use is masonry material. Masonry architecture is a heavy material construction like stone, bricks, for example. Compared to the traditional construction, in this region, use lightweight construction type material. Lightweight material like timber that can be moved or carried anywhere easily. Even one house, you can carry one house easily from one place to another.
But the fact that the Portuguese was accustomed to heavy building materials at the time, it actually led to an interesting innovation when they tried to bring their architectural style to Malacca.
The type of masonry they use is different from they have in Europe. They do not import stone or granite or marble from Europe, but at that time, because it's very far from Europe, and they just able to come to Asia from Europe, through, in Bahasa we call Tanjung Harapan, from the African continent, they're able to cross. And then very hard to carry, to import the masonry material from Europe. So they find the available masonry material in Malacca. At Malacca at that time, there are available masonry material named laterite stone. That's why if you go to Malacca today, you can see the ruins of Ephemosa, you can notice that all the building material used is laterite stone. Laterite stone is a soft stone. Color is red and easy to break. It's not very hard stone. It's a type of soft stone. In Malacca at that time, laterite stone is very popular stone, not used for building construction, but used for what we call it batu nisan, the graveyard stone type. Okay, for the local population in Malacca at that time, the laterite stone. For the local people, they call laterite stone as a hillstone or batu bukit. So that is the material they use.
One of the most famous laterite constructions in Malacca that has lasted till today is, of course, Ephemosa. Laterite buildings are uncommon in the world. Besides Malacca, laterite has been used as a building material in several parts of India. When the Dutch arrived in 1641, drastic changes were made to the landscape of Malacca.
The Dutch came to Malacca. They take over the Ephemosa and they changed the name of the Nossa Senhora Church to today name, which is Saint Paul. And the name of the hill also people name Saint Paul Hill. During the invasion of the Dutch in Malacca, most of the area in the trading area is totally destroyed from the cannon fire or whatever. So they rebuild. So that's why there are many names. They rebuild and reconstruct the street. That's why many, many streets in this area, the name has the Dutch name, like Jonkers Street, Heerhugowaard Street, and many other more streets.
And in the rebuilding process of Malacca, the Dutch introduced a new construction material.
What the Dutch did at that time, they do not use any more laterite stone for the construction material. So the Dutch introduce the brick. What the unique about the brick introduced by the Dutch is the brick the Dutch use is imported from Holland, from Europe. It's not the local materials, because at that time there is no expertise in this region to produce brick materials. The local master builder only familiar with timber construction. Okay, talking about bricks, actually, this region already introduced by the brick construction by the Indian people when they introduced Hindu and Buddhist temples. You can find in Lebah Bujang and Sungai Batu, okay, in Kedah. You can see the temple built using bricks. However, the local still recognize and want to specialize using timber as the main construction materials. The first brick from Europe arrived and used in Malacca and as well as in Southeast Asia. Okay, the first brick building is Stadthuis. Stadthuis is the municipal council building built by the Dutch, where the governor of the Dutch at that time lived and become the main office of the Dutch administration.
We'll continue our time travel through our colorful architectural past after these messages. Stay tuned. This is Outside the Lines on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Get to Old Navy for star-spangled style. Right now, everything's on sale, up to 60% off. That's right, get everything from tees, shorts, dresses, and swim, all at 60% off. Now till July 7th at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid through 7/7, select styles only.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're back on Outside the Lines. I'm Ezra Zayed. This is the show where we look at how our lives are inspired by the colors that surround us. Today, we've been taking a look at our architecture and how it's intertwined with our colonial past. Joining me is Professor Ahmad Sanusi Hassan, who teaches architecture at University Science Malaysia. Earlier in the show, we explored how the arrival of the Portuguese and the Dutch influenced the architectural landscape of Malacca. Many of the buildings that lasted from the colonial era have become important heritage sites today. And now, moving forward from the Dutch colonization in Malacca, Professor Sanusi takes us to the British colonial era, and that began when the British arrived in Penang in the late 18th century.
Francis Light found Penang, and he built the first settlement around the Penang Cape. Today is Fort Cornwallis, and he built Fort Cornwallis, and then he named the city in Penang at that time, Georgetown. Why the name Georgetown? Coming from the name King George III. At that time, is the King of England. So when the British opened the Penang Port City, the first settlement they built is administrative area and also the port city. You know where is the port city? The port city today location in the Beach Street and today Welkie. Okay, they do the land reclamation. The British also introduced land reclamation. That's why land reclamation very popular in Malaysia today, done by our government. Continuation of the influence from the British way in urban planning and architecture. So why we call Beach Street? Beach Street is about 200 or 300 meters away from the beach. Why the name is the beach? Because at that time, along the Beach Street is the beach, but today along the beach is Welkie, the street name Welkie. So they create the port city center. You can find around the Welkie today and Beach Street, there are financial and commercial area. This is where the port city of Penang at that time.
Now, the British, who were hoping to build a successful port city in Penang, were aware of competition at the time. Malacca, which was being controlled by the Dutch, was already an established and bustling port city. But the British had ideas on how to attract traders to come to Penang.
Okay, how to attract the traders come to Penang? Because at that time, they go also in Malacca for trade. The Chinese merchants and also the Malay merchants from all over Southeast Asia and also the Arab merchants. How they want to attract? So they know the Chinese trader would like to come for trade if there is other traders from other places. So they ask the Indian traders, they invite and give an area today named as Little India. Okay, so they trade, they ask the Indian traders from India come and settle to do trades. So the second zone that established is Little India. So India, they has two parts. One is Hindu India, the other one is Muslim India. So that's why you can see in Little India, and you can see there are two parts of Indian settlements. And then the Arab-Malay settlement, mostly Arab, because Arab and Malays, many they are mixed together. They have intermarriage. So they also establish Arab-Malay settlements. And then the last traders who come, okay, who get attraction of Penang to go to this port city is the Chinese trader. Many of them in area number one today in UNESCO World Heritage List Zone, at the south part of the Penang Capes, after the Indian settlement and the Arab-Malay settlement. And there are also a small number of the British people settled where the location of St. George Pau located. Because French is like invite all the Eurasian to come here and to settle, to help the British to administer the new trading center. Because the Eurasian is not welcomed by the Dutch, because Eurasian, they are intermarriage between the Portuguese and also the local surrounding people in Malacca at that time. So when the British already established Penang as a port city, they know the competition that they had at that time with Malacca.
But this sense of rivalry, that eventually led to the destruction of Malacca as a port city.
What happened at that time is, in Europe at that time, they cannot do anything because the Dutch is their allies. But at that time, something happened in Europe. The invasion of Napoleon from France to hold over Europe, because Napoleon has a very big ambition. He want to conquer the whole Europe and want to make Europe as one nation. So one of the region he able to conquer is Holland at that time. So Holland at that time, their king and all their aristocrats have to run away to England and seek refuge because their country already conquered. But very strange, even though they don't have country, but they have colonies all over the world. They have colony also in Southeast Asia. That mean part of the colony is Malacca. So because they do not have government in Europe anymore, they seek refuge under the British. So they give to the British to administer Malacca at that time. Okay? So what the British did, they do not actually encourage the traders from China, from Arab countries, regions, from India, from Southeast Asia, to gather in Malacca. But they say, please go to Penang. What they did, they destroy Malacca. They bomb Malacca. Today, you see the ruins of Fort Formosa today is the ruins of the British bomb Malacca. They just want to destroy. So that when the traders come, they say, oh, no anymore trading area here. And then after people don't go to Malacca, the traders will go to Penang. That is the story about how Malacca after that become not anymore important port city. When the Dutch came, they see Malacca already destroyed, so they focus on Batavia, Jakarta today.
And in Penang, the British constructed many buildings that included not only government and financial buildings, but also educational and religious institutions. Many of them are still around and well-known today. For example, the City Hall, the Eastern and Oriental Hotel, and the Penang Museum. And these buildings, like the Dutch ones, carry influences from Greek and Roman architecture, only with a more modern twist. This style was named neoclassical architecture.
Because these architecture symbolize the idea of secularism, the idea of church and state, okay, political changes in Europe at that time, okay, where the state become more powerful than the church in terms of governing bodies. And also, what more important is secularism, which focus on import-export tradings at that time, what we call is capitalist economy, and also which is the belief under the government which practice democracy. So democracy coming back to Europe. So they are more focused on idea of democracy and trading based on capitalist approach. And this system actually inherited from the Greek and the Roman civilization. Okay, because during the Roman civilization is the peak of Europe at that time, where the trades become the major activities of the empire. They're able to build many cities. So when we talking about reviving architecture of Roman and Greek civilization, we're talking about architecture known as classical architecture. Okay, Greek and Roman, known as classical architecture. That's why today you can see classical architecture dominate and the image of Georgetown today, as well as many all cities across Malaysia, which introduced during British administration. After they able to penetrate the whole Malaya at that time, okay, they conquer all cities in Malaya, and then they introduce the classical architecture. So the unique in Malaysia as a whole today is all type of building built, especially during the British time, have a passion with classical architecture. It's not only to the government building, but also to educational building, to shop houses, to the financial building, as well as religious building. That's why you can see there is an influence of classical architecture, not only to the cathedral or church construction, but also to the mosque construction, to the temple construction also, either Chinese temple or Indian temple. So there is a great influence. So very easy you can find Doric column with Doric orders, Ionic column, Ionic orders, Corinthian orders, built all over Penang, as well as the whole Malaysian cities. And they use elements of classical architecture in construction and the building design.
After this, we'll be taking a look at shop houses built during the British colonial rule, which have transitioned through different stages to reflect social and administrative changes. Stay tuned. I'm Ezra Zayed on Outside the Lines on BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back. This is Outside the Lines. I'm Ezra Zayed. On the show, we've been taking a look at how our varied colonial past has shaped our local architecture till today. And now we're going to zoom in on shop houses, which were built in the region during the British colonial rule. Shop houses were iconic in the sense that the transitions in their styles highlighted the social and administrative changes that happened during the colonial era. Here's Professor Ahmad Sanusi Hassan, Professor of Architecture at University Science Malaysia.
When the Chinese came, there are three phases, the Chinese who came to Malaya at that time. The first phase is the builders. Okay, they came here to help the British to build the building and port cities. They are the builders. The second one, they are the traders when there are facilities, infrastructure in Penang. Okay, I refer to Penang because Penang is the first city built by the British as the case study. They are the Chinese traders. They are rich and wealthy Chinese community compared to the first phase. The third phase, they come work as laborers, okay, laborers related to help the traders, not only Chinese traders, but the British, the Malays, and the Indian traders. The Chinese are familiar in their country at that time, as they come mostly from the south, in the Kwantung, in Hokkien region, is around Hong Kong area, okay. So they are used with the construction of shop houses. So when they come here, because of the limited land, so shop houses, everybody want the entrance the entrance is small. Everybody has entrance, but the length is a distance away, very long, compared to the width. You can find still today in Malacca and also in Penang, which has a very narrow and long shophouses. It's derived from the idea of trading business in China at that time.
The shophouses were built with a special structure to suit its dual function, as both a shop and a place to stay. And they were also designed to suit environmental factors.
So, what is shophouses? We call shophouses because it contains two buildings, but looks as one building. In front of the shophouses is a shop. Okay, they create a courtyard in between, and at the back is house. That means the family settle in the house, and then they have courtyard in between, and then they do the business at the shop located at the front. At that time, because there is no technology, so the design of the shop houses relates to environment, because there is no air condition, so they have to use the natural ventilation. That's why they have courtyard in between. There is no proper water supply, so they have to create a well, okay, a well for the water supply at the court. Also the family place to relax or whatever, and at the back is their toilet.
One of the notable characteristics of shophouses is their considerable length as compared to its width. So they look relatively narrow from the front, but extend for a distance once you've entered the building. The length of the shophouses could range from 200 to 300 feet, which is typically about 13 times the width of these buildings.
And then there is no construction of reinforced concrete. Okay, so they rely on the timber, and the floor also timber. The only using brick is the walls. The first type of shop houses actually we call atap shop houses, built before 1880. We cannot really find today atap shop houses. Okay, atap shop houses is shop houses built using timber. They learn from the local construction, so they built using timber, and they do not really have money at that time. Okay, they just do early business. So mostly they use available material in that area.
But the building materials had to change when a great fire spread through Kuala Lumpur in 1881. Timber was especially fire-prone, so the British resident at the time, Sir Frank Swettenham, introduced building regulations in the year 1884, where timber was to be replaced by brick structures. Thatched or atap roof was also to be changed to tiled roofs.
So it led to the construction and design of early permanent shop houses, because atap shop houses is not permanent one. And even today, this become the mind of all over Malaysia today. If the any of the building or house built using timber, we can say this is like not permanent. If built using bricks, heavy material, or looks like permanent. So from 1880s to 1900, they shift the construction, the design, using new material, mostly bricks, in construction of shophouses. Okay, the name is early permanent shophouses. And later, as a trading society, they got richer. So they able to be more delicate and fancy shophouses. We call transitional shophouses. So from early, very simple window, very simple door, whatever, there is a progress from 1900 to 1920s. And at the peak of shophouses design, where they got the most profit at that time, is in between 1920s to 1940s. They're not anymore talking about to build a simple average type of shophouses design, but now they're thinking about status to expression of wealthy city, wealthy government, wealthy administration. So the society at that time built, mostly Chinese, yeah, they built fully European shophouses. They want to imitate the British, because they see British as a symbol of status. the British used neoclassical architecture from Roman architecture and Greek. So they want to imitate, they want to express the status. So they built fully European shop houses. Have a very delicate floral motif with pediment, with the Roman arch, with cornice. Okay, when people have money, they want to express whatever the profit they have. So they express with architecture.
That was Professor Ahmad Sanusi Hassan, Professor of Architecture at University Science Malaysia. This program was produced by Josie Liu. If you missed any part of this program, you can download the podcast on our BFM app. And of course, that's available on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. I'm Ezra Zayed on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Joe Cordell of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. At Cordell & Cordell, we encourage our clients to participate, to recognize how essential their role in this process is. They've got to be willing to help us help them. And by working jointly in a sort of partnership, we're more likely to get the best possible outcome for our clients. And that's really the standard that our clients can fairly hold us to, is what is the best possible outcome for them. So clients who are facing divorce need to recognize that for them to succeed, they need a partnership between them and their attorney.
The attorneys at Cordell & Cordell work to help men maximize their role in their children's lives. Contact the domestic litigation firm of Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's San Francisco area attorneys, a partner men can count on. 650-389-1111. Online at CordellCordell.com. That's CordellCordell.com. Offices in San Francisco, San Mateo, and San Jose. Se habla español. Legal services available in English and Spanish. Kimberly Llewellyn, licensed in California.